Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated. This morning, the court has two causes on the oral submission docket. In the order of the presentation, they are WFA ATV Incorporated versus John McLemore from McLennan County, and Richard Dwayne Proctor and others versus Mary Andrews and others from Lubbock County. In each of these causes, the court has allotted 20 minutes for each side to present oral arguments. The petitioner may reserve a portion of that time for rebuttal by advising the marshal of the court. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each argument. We'll conclude these arguments well before lunch. These arguments are being recorded by the clerk of our court, and you may purchase a tape of an argument by making application with the clerk. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in WFAA versus McLemore.
May it please the court, Mr. Paul Walker will present argument for petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. Good morning. I will address two issues on which WFAA TV was incorrectly denied summary judgment in this case. The first issue is John McLemore, the respondent's status as a public figure required to prove actual malice in his libel case. The second issue is the truth of the news reports that are at issue in this case. Let me first address the public figure issue, since that's the issue that the Waco Court of Appeals spent its time deciding. There are two kinds of public figures. There are all-purpose public figures, those that are pervasively known and have some position of prominence in the community, and limited-purpose public figures. Those are persons who are known in connection with a particular controversy. John McLemore, the respondent here, the plaintiff below, is both kinds of public figures. Without doubt, he is a limited-purpose public figure. By his actions in thrusting himself to the forefront of the public controversy involving the ATF raid on the Branch Davidian compound in Waco now 5 years ago, in which four ATF agents were killed and 20 were wounded.
Well, let me ask you about those facts. They, Jewel in Atlanta reported the backpack that ultimately exploded. And I assume he was interviewed and people asked him questions and did all that sort of thing. Under what use was he a limited public figure for the purpose of having no cause of action for the newspapers that reported him as a suspect?
I believe he was a limited purpose public figure at the point that he voluntarily went on network news shows. And Mr. McLemore had a similar occurrence here in which he was there assigned to cover this raid, and he did cover this raid for his TV station.
So
he went beyond that and held a press conference and appeared on CNN.
So the irrespective of how that person gets involved in the circumstance, the instant that person does anything other than involuntarily appear to talk about that, they become a public figure for the purposes of losing whatever protection private individuals have from false press about them in the absence of malice.
Right. Gertz teaches, which is the seminal case on public figure doctrine by the U.S. Supreme Court, teaches that when a person takes voluntary action in connection with a particular controversy to thrust himself into the forefront of that controversy, then he loses his status as a private figure. And that's exactly what occurred with Mr. McLemore in relation to this news event.
In the Jonesboro shooting, there's a psychologist who is saying it's very important to let victims tell their side of the story, to let them talk about it. It's therapeutic to them. I assume a reporter who wants to come up and start talking to them, they don't have to talk to the reporter, but they voluntarily do. They were there. They were an eyewitness. They immediately become a public figure for the purpose of no longer being a private individual with respect to the press. That's
when they voluntarily make those statements. And I would point out there's a greater societal therapeutic value that's at stake here And that's the value that we protect by the First Amendment, to have a free and robust, open discussion of significant public events. This particular event was one of the most astounding news events that had happened in our time. And there was tremendous controversy over what was the cause of these four agents losing their lives when they attempted to serve search warrants and arrest warrants. And it's the protecting of the open and candid and robust discussion related to those issues.
How is that candid, open, and robust discussion protected if an individual is discouraged from talking with the media because they would lose some valuable privacy protections?
Well, I think certainly in this particular case, Mr. McLemore wasn't discouraged, and we see time and time again in well-known news events or well-covered news events where the central participants step to the forefront and go on talk shows, write books about it, entertain movie deals, hold press conferences. All of those actions were engaged here by Mr. McLemore. He did all those things that classically or indicia of a person having public figure status. The record here doesn't show that there's any deterrence from people being informed, from the participants in news events making their views known and being heard. In fact, that's exactly what the First Amendment protects. And,
Mr. Wattler, Mr. McLemore takes the position, though, that the only reason why he was on CNN and out in the public eye dealing with the controversy was to defend himself against what the various news organizations had done in terms of the accusations. And but for the conduct, he would have not been led into becoming a limited public figure if that's what he did. Would you respond to that?
Yes. The record is, and it's helpful, I think, to understand the exact sequence here. This entire event in the news story that's the subject matter of it occurred over a very short period of time. The beginning event was the raid on the Branch Davidian compound, the initial raid that eventually led to the 52-day standoff with the residents of the compound. And it was when Mr. McLemore was covering that raid, thrusting himself physically into that raid, was on the compound grounds. He then reported live from the scene of that raid. That was the first time that he was on live TV, reporting live from the scene. When he left the scene of the raid, a couple hours after there was a stalemate in place, if you will, and when he left the scene of the raid, there were any number of other reporters who had come to the scene, and at that point he held a press conference. All of this occurred before there was any question raised of what was the role of the media. Did the media tip anyone off? So he is going beyond his own mere job requirements, appearing on national TV, talking to journalists, giving interviews, before there's any question raised, and certainly before the subject newscast. 2 days later, the ABC News program, Nightline, devoted its entire show to what went wrong in Waco just 48 hours earlier. And Kathy Fair, a reporter from the Houston Chronicle, appeared on that show and accurately and truthfully reported that the ATF agents at the scene who had participated in the raid were blaming the media and accusing the local media, those media who were there at the scene at the time that the raid began, of causing the deaths and injuries to their comrades. And it was the next day, Wednesday, that WFAA, Channel 8 in Dallas, broadcast the report that's the subject of this. So all this happened in a very short period of time. And importantly, before WFAA made its broadcast, others in the news media, particularly Kathy Fair, on her Nightline appearance, had raised the issue of whether or not members of the local media were responsible for tipping the call.
Well, let's set some parameters here. You're not saying, are you, that every TV news reporter who does a story is a public figure?
Your Honor, I am saying that every TV news reporter who has brought a libel action and has the issue decided of whether or not he's a public figure has been found to be a public figure, except John McLemore in the decision by the Waco Board of Appeals. So there's a well-established, broad body of law that I was counting on this morning. I believe there's 21 cases that we've been able to locate where reporters and TV reporters, book authors, publishers of newspapers, columnists, people who have various standing in the news media have brought libel actions.
Well, I understand, but let's exclude authors, opinion writers, and stick only to people who report stories over the television media. It seems to be your position now that every TV reporter who does a story is a public figure for the purposes related to that story.
For the purposes related to that story, yes, Your Honor, that would be my position, that he is a limited purpose public figure.
So all these other issues about how the individual in this particular case may or may not have injected himself into everything that was going on out there is really irrelevant as far as you're concerned.
No.
All that matters is that he showed up and talked in front of a camera.
No, again, there's two kinds of public figures, the all-purpose public figure, pervasive public figure, and those typically, what I hesitate on is when you say every reporter. I think every reporter who is on TV for the period of time that Mr. McLemore was, over 5 years in Waco, every night, five nights a week, achieves public figure status, pervasive, not in relation to a particular issue.
But that's different than what we just talked about 1 minute ago. That's why I'm trying to set these parameters. Are you saying that a TV reporter who does a story on television is going to be a public figure for purposes of the subject matter related to that story?
If there's a pre-existing public controversy that's actually being discussed about that story, the reporter cannot bootstrap his way into creating public figure status, or the defendant in a libel action cannot bootstrap their way. It's not simply by virtue of the report alone. It's by virtue of the prior existence of a public controversy that the reporter is reporting on that he becomes a public figure. So with that qualifier, I would agree with your
question. But I understood your comment is what brings a private citizen to be a public figure for a specific purpose is simply a voluntary answering of media questions.
That would be one example.
So,
and Justice Abbott's...
So McLemore, so your discussion is not a prior controversy of public interest. It is, I report on a story, and then, for whatever reason, there is an interest in that story beyond just what I reported, and I'm asked about that by media. I then become a specific public purpose for any discussions about that event.
I would agree with that, Your Honor.
Okay.
Has
the weight of the authority that you talked about dealing with, whether news, media, personnel or public figures, determined that most of these people are all-purpose public figures, or have the holdings been they are limited purpose public figures?
There have been both ways. I would say most of the cases fall on the all-purpose public figure end. There's some imprecision among these cases. There is not always a bright line distinction between the two categories. And functionally, once a person is a public figure, it doesn't really matter if they're limited purpose or pervasive. The same consequences in terms of the First Amendment protection related to actual malice arises.
Is it your view that the appropriate test for making this determination is the Fifth Circuit's test in Trotter, and I believe they were following a First Circuit case, Lalbon? Is it that your view that that's the rule that has been generally applied by the cases and should be applied in this case?
Yes, Your Honor, it is. Because Mr. McLemore was a public figure, he falls among the categories of libel plaintiffs who is required to prove the existence of actual malice in order to prevail in his libel action. This court held in the Castle versus Brand and Carr versus Brasher cases from 1989 that a libel defendant is entitled to summary judgment if he can negate the existence of actual malice. Here, this record shows that there was no actual malice associated with this broadcast. And of course, actual malice is a term of art in libel cases, and it speaks to the reporter, the broadcaster's state of mind at the time of the alleged defamatory report. And it asks whether or not the reporter had a state of mind where he or she was free of doubt as to the truth of the broadcast. Here, the only evidence in this record is absolutely undisputed, is testimony by Valerie Williams, the WFA reporter, that she believed the truth of the report. She believed this report that she presented related to John McLemore.
Can a television station escape liability by repeating a story that is on, you know, CNN reports today? Or what need they do beyond that?
There's two ways. I understand what you're saying. Is it enough to insulate you from liability to simply say someone else has said this, someone else has reported it? typically that will arise in two ways, and both of which are dealt with in this case. One is whether the subject of that report is a public figure, and the person making the report makes the report without doubt as to the truth of it, which occurred here. The other way is classically, and in the common law, a privilege. And the common law developed, apart from the First Amendment protections, the common law long ago protected speech that was reporting of official proceedings, official allegations that were under investigation. So here, what Kathy Fair was saying on Nightline, it's not so much that the statement was made on Nightline, but that she was accurately reporting an official investigation that was then underway by both federal and state law enforcement officials. And Texas has long recognized that privilege, both under common law and by statute, and we believe it's constitutionally based. So if you accurately report that the police are investigating these allegations, then the reporter is not put to the proof of the underlying allegations.
If they only report what another station has reported, what?
What the other station reported does not, if the report is not associated with a fair report privilege, in other words, it's a report of an official investigation, if it doesn't concern a public figure or a public official, there may well be liability for repeating what the other broadcaster has said if it is not true. It of itself does not insulate a broadcaster from liability. There have to be other circumstances attached to what the broadcaster said, the first broadcaster said, that would insulate the second broadcaster from liability.
Well, let me ask you a question with regards to when Mr. McElmore's name first surfaced as perhaps as the person who attempted the Brent Davidian. His name was not mentioned in the Nightline report.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Did your client, WFAA, mention his name?
WFA mentioned his name and included video of him reporting live from the scene in the context that he was one of several reporters at the scene at the time.
They did not say he was the one that tipped off.
Absolutely not. Now, that is, of course, the characterization that the plaintiff, the respondent, gives to the broadcast. And it's our position that the broadcast is not reasonably capable of that particular defamatory meaning. He says we fingered him as the tipster. And I think any fair reading or fair viewing of the broadcast shows that he correctly was mentioned to be among a group of persons who were actually under investigation at that time for being the tipster. And that's the essence of the report.
But for summary judgment purposes, we have to take their statements as true and correct.
Well, true and correct, if no, Your Honor, not as to defamatory meaning, because that is a question of law. Whether the broadcast is susceptible to the characterization, the interpretation, the meaning that the plaintiff gives it is a pure question of law that this court has said in the Musser versus Smith is a threshold question. And it doesn't depend on the summary judgment evidence. It's a question of law. Is this broadcast capable of being interpreted to say that John McElmore, without doubt, has been found to be the tipster, which is his theory of the case? And our position simply is it's not capable of that defamatory meaning, which is yet a third category from which WFA was entitled to summary judgment.
Any other questions? Yeah, let me clarify your position on malice. You seem to be saying that the only evidence concerning malice was the affidavit of Valerie Williams.
That's correct.
Saying that she subjectively believed the truth.
That's correct.
If mere subjective belief by the person accused of the defamation were sufficient to overcome malice, would that not, for all practical purposes, eliminate malice?
Your Honor, it does not, because it cannot be just a bare-bone belief. I believe the truth of what I'm reporting. It's not explicit, but I think a careful reading of the Castro versus Brand case shows that there has to be support for that belief. There has to be some basis for making that belief. And Valerie Williams set that basis of her belief out. She was relying on the credibility of Kathy Fair, the Houston Chronicle, ABC News, statements made by the ATF. So she had a basis for her belief that what she was reporting was correct.
The arguments, at least as I perceive them, by the respondents in their brief, seem to cast a picture of willful disregard on the part of WFAA. And would you agree that willful disregard of the truth would be sufficient to establish malice.
Your Honor, the term is reckless disregard that the U.S. Supreme Court and this court has recognized, and yes, that is sufficient. However, the legal standard, and this again is a term of art, is often misunderstood. The reckless disregard for the truth in a media libel action means publishing something while entertaining serious doubts as to whether it was true. It's a subjective standard. It turns on what is actually in the mind of the reporter or the news organization making the broadcast. It's not an objective standard. It's not whether the light was red, you ran the light. It's what were you thinking at the time? Did you publish something saying, well, I'm not really sure if this is true or not, but we're going to go ahead and publish it. That is the reckless disregard that would be sufficient to defeat a motion for summary judgment.
Any other questions? Thank you, Your Honor. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court. My name is Greg White, and I represent John McElmore. The question for decision today is not whether it is permissible to attack a television anchorman, but what degree of truth must be used in the attack. Answers to that question begin with the proposition that the individual's right to protection of his own good name reflects no more than our basic concept of essential dignity and worth of every human being, and that concept is at the root of any decent system of ordered liberty. It is the privilege of the various states to fashion the protection for individual reputation. The Constitution only requires that we support a wide open and robust debate to two types of people whose reputations must give way. That is, public officials who are elected and required to join in the debate, and public figures who are either so famous that they can't avoid the debate, or they voluntarily join in the debate on a public issue.
Well, let's take your client, for example. Your client was on TV for 5 years, 5 minutes a week. He was one of the first reporters at the incident that gave rise to this lawsuit. And he was on live. He was on CNN, worldwide. He gave news conferences, many news conferences about this issue. Under what definition is he not a limited public figure?
All right. Those things, notoriety, gaining notoriety somewhere, are only a part of the equation. The Supreme Court has looked at several people who they have said have obtained a type of notoriety that opens their reputation for debate for all purposes. It named Wally Butts, who was a Bear Bryant in his day. But Mrs. Firestone, who the court said was so well known that she had to have a press clipping service to keep track of the times the media had mentioned her, is not a public figure, even though she is well known. Notoriety does not make the equation. What is important in determining whether a person is a public figure and has given up the right to his own good name is whether he has joined the debate. That means, has that person actually tried to influence the public's opinion on a controversy?
So that's a different standard.
Given the facts that Judge Gonzalez just gave you, what's missing from those facts that keeps Mr. McElmore from becoming a public figure?
He is not the type of person that has persuasive power and influence. What McElmore was on TV about was that he was on the scene and there was some men who were being killed and he went up to try and help them. And if a person makes a decision at that point to give up his own good name when he aids those that are in help, that are in need of help, I think that's a bad decision. To say at that point your reputation has been given up.
So you're saying we should not apply the standards set forth in Trotter?
Trotter mentioned some of the right things. I've got four things that I think make up the equation about what a person is if he's a public figure.
Well, but do you agree with Trotter as the test?
I don't agree with Trotter as the test. Trotter as a case was properly decided. The test is not the end all.
And why are we not bound by Trotter?
Trotter's Fifth Circuit case, it came from the D.C. Circuit. Now, the Fifth Circuit adopted it, they said, but they really didn't give much discussion other than to say, here's the 1, 2, 3 in Trotter. Then they went through and described what Mr. Trotter had done, what kind of person he was, and why he had involved himself in the resolution of this public issue and therefore was fair game in his reputation. If you recall, Trotter was a labor violence case down in Central America. And the first question that arose is, why are we having all this violence down here, and where is it happening? Then it centered on Trotter's plant, and it turned out that Trotter was the president and responsible for day-to-day operations of that plant. Somebody should be able to ask him, why are you having these problems? And when he answered, number one, you know, we ought to go sue those guys for defamation. And number two, he was asked to speak out on a shareholder resolution to all the shareholders of Coca-Cola Corporation. To say that that man was not in the middle of the controversy by his own volition speaking on an issue of public concern would be a wrong decision.
But Mr. White, Trotter was decided in 1987, and it followed an earlier case that had been decided. And since then, would you agree that most courts who have looked at the issue have applied that test or some variation of it?
I will say that some variation is correct. I will also say that courts have said when they're trying to decide who's a public figure, it's like nailing a jellyfish to a wall.
So has that generally been the test that has been used by state courts and federal courts at least the mid-1980s when this question has been presented?
It has been cited often. I don't think that it...
Well, what other test has been used by state courts or federal courts who have looked at this issue since the mid-1980s?
There has not been another 1, 2, 3 test that I can present to you. And 1, 2, 3, or 4.
Well, are you asking us to devise another test to apply in this particular case?
I don't think there's any need to devise a test. I think that the public figure question is one that is decided on a case-by-case basis.
Well, I noticed your argument today and your brief always used the phrase public figure. And you seem to be skirting the issue of limited public figure, which
I
is
hadn't
not
gotten there
the same.
Yet.
Is that right?
That's correct, and I haven't gotten there yet. I will be glad to address it.
Well, that seems to me their position is that without a doubt in their mind, Mr. McNamara is a limited purpose public figure, and I'd like to hear from you on why he's not in this particular incident. Would you agree that there can be just one incident? You don't need to look at his prior history as a TV anchor person for the Waco station. This one incident can make him a limited public figure.
Absolutely.
And why is he not in this case?
Okay, because the short answer is because there was no controversy on which he was speaking out.
Well, now, first, isn't it true that Ms. Fair said on the Nightline the business about the ATF thinks somebody from the media leaked the race?
She said that, citing an undisclosed
source. And didn't he also say in his affidavit that as soon as that broadcast was over, that the station was flooded with calls outraged about that, and that Mr. McNamara's name was used by these callers after Kathy Fair's report?
Yes, that's in the record.
And she never used his name in the
that's correct.
Broadcast?
Yes, sir.
And so he also had a worldwide press conference after the event.
Okay, but that's different than the Nightline newscast. When you say
so, in other words, before anybody ever used his name, people in Waco already were using his name as the alleged perpetrator, whether it was true or not.
Well, I want to tell you that the facts are a little bit out of order the way that you put them to me. That may be your intent in doing so.
No, not
okay.
Necessary.
The so-called press conference was McNamara goes out and he carries the ATF guys out on his car. Later in the day, people come up to him with a microphone and say, what happened, what happened, what happened? He did not, according to the summary judgment evidence, call people together and say, let me tell you my story. He was the guy that had the injured ATF people on his truck, and people said, what happened to him? All right, then the Nightline newscast took place. So putting the press conference after Nightline would be a wrong order to
well,
put
I didn't
it
mean
in.
To do that if I
okay.
did.
Okay, well, that's all right. I'm just trying to put it the right way. In any event, the fact that somebody called in later and named him doesn't really excuse WFAA from naming him, and we say that they did. They put
well, but I want you to focus on why you believe Mr. McNamara is not a limited purpose public figure based on the fact of this case, which is a question of law.
All right. McLemore is not, when he goes and takes his job assignment to report on an event, and he reports on the facts of the event, and does not in any way say the government did a wrong thing, the government did a right thing, the Davidians are right, the Davidians are wrong. He does not get into the debate on who's right or wrong here. He just says, what happened? He has not injected himself into the debate on public controversy. He has not opened his reputation for all to investigate merely by saying what happened. That's just exactly what was going on with Elmer Gertz. The man was doing his job as a lawyer, and although it was bound to get some public attention, the court said, that doesn't mean that just because you get public attention, you have opened your reputation. The same can be said for Mrs. Firestone. The same can be said for Elia Wolfson, who intentionally ignored a grand jury summons and knew at that point that he would garner some public attention that would not be favorable. But that did not open everything in his life to public examination absent reasonable investigation.
Mr. Walker,
in your view, of Ted Koppelman, Ben McEnmore's shoes, same result.
Ted Koppel does not report merely the news.
But
Ted,
if he had, in this particular case, they go out every once in a while.
I'll tell you, the jellyfish is really bad on who's famous enough and who's not famous enough. I believe, and I'm arguing to you, that John McLemore is not as famous as Mrs. Firestone was.
What's the relevant geographical area?
Well, I think that it has to be the same area in which the publication was made.
So if it's worldwide, somebody that has 20 friends in each city in the world is going to be ahead of someone that's universally known in one town in Texas.
Well, I guess what I'm responding to is arguments have been made by some of the amici in this case that there is such a thing as a local all-purpose public figure. And that may be true if the publication about that figure is limited to his locality.
Well, if Ms. Firestone had been defamed in the Palm Beach newspapers, would she have been a limited-purpose local figure?
In the green sheet in Palm Beach, if it had said something about her, I think she would have had less of an argument that she was not a public figure. But that the purpose of that public figure status is that that person has opened themselves up to the area where they have it, it's local, that they have pervasive influence there. You can't take a person in Palm Beach society and say they have pervasive influence there and then publish in Time magazine and expect that person to have enough ability to reply. And that's one of the key things, Justice Baker, one of the things you got to consider when you say the person a public figure is, do they have an ability to reply?
Well, certainly, whether he did or not, since he's a TV anchor person.
Well, I'll tell you flat out, no, he doesn't. Summary judgment evidence in this case, if you'll read Mr. McLemore's deposition testimony, pages 133 and 248, says, I was told by my boss not to give another interview after that comment was made. I did not give an interview because I was afraid I would be fired. A television anchorman who gets up there and is supposed to report the news does not have the chance at that point to say, breaking away from today's news, let me respond to the personal allegations that have been made against me. So that's why I said flat out, no, he doesn't have the ability to reply to this.
Well, the petitioner says he appeared on talk shows and other things over the next 3 or 4 years.
After he was fired by his station. So did he try? Did the people continue to ask him about it? Yes, they did. But it's not the kind of inherent ability that the courts have said is expected of a public figure, that being that that person has the power, if I can put it that way, to compel others to listen to his side of the story. And McLemore doesn't have it. And that's one of the key things. It's mentioned in Trotter, as a matter of fact, just Texan, that we look at whether this person has the ability to reply or not. But see, they didn't put it in that three-part test. But ability to reply is certainly highly relevant to a person's status as a public figure. I wanted to spend a bit of my time on this question of truth.
Well, let me take you back one step before you move on to the next area. Mr. Wattler has said, and his brief indicates, that the weight of authority is that media personalities, news media personalities, are either general purpose public figures or limited purpose public figures. Do you agree that the weight of authority, you've looked at this question in various fact situations, has gone that direction?
I will tell you that. Okay, yes, straight answer.
Now, do you know of any other case besides this decision, by the way, from Court of Appeals, that has gone the other way?
No. I can tell you why that's right, though. And that is because in those cases, you're looking at a journalist who is a commentator. Take their leading case, Dracos. What did they say about Mr. Dracos? Mr. Dracos' newscasts were highly accusatory. He put his interviewees on the rack and did not hesitate to lay on the verbal whip is from the Court of Appeals opinion in that case. These people that are cited as being public figures because they are news people are people who lay on the verbal whip. What's good for the goose is good for the gander is what the court is saying when it consistently holds that these people are public figures. They say, you have opened the debate on that. You are subject to the rule in New York Times versus Sullivan. We don't have a case like McLemore where the defamed person is a person who did nothing but report dry facts.
Are you saying then that all of the cases that have been decided by these 21 other jurisdictions all involve personalities like Mr. Draco?
Well,
who were hot buttons in terms of the kind of broadcasting they did?
In varying degrees. I will not tell you that all 21 of them are people who have laid on the verbal whip, but I will tell you they are that, I don't know which 21 you're talking about, but the majority of the cases that I have read are people who have expressed an opinion on a public question. They have said, you know what we ought to do, or this is what I don't like about this that's happened. They open themselves to the debate. They have voluntarily assumed the risk that somebody is going to disagree with them and criticize them for taking that stand.
One quick question before you go on. What was the geographic region of the publication?
Well, it went out from Dallas.
But was it just for the local TV shows in Dallas, or was it published nationwide, or was it even published in Waco?
I'm going to have to go outside the record to tell you anything about Channel 8 WFAA. It's north Texas, northeast Texas. We get it down in Waco.
But bottom line, there's nothing in the record establishing the geography of the publication.
There's nothing in the record that establishes the geography of the publication. I tell you that from my memory of it. I didn't look to see specifically how to answer that question. If you really want me to do so, I'll send it to the court to try and find it. Truth. Let me talk about truth. What we are looking at here in truth is a knowledge that what was said about McLemore was not true. He was not the tipster. He was not hiding in the trees. Nobody believed McLemore had tipped him, and nobody had information.
See, nobody believed it. Without even mentioning his name in the Mightline program, your station or his station was flooded with calls accusing McLemore of being the person who did the deed.
And I may have overstated what I meant to get across to the court, and that is that there was not anybody from the government, a Texas Ranger, a FBI person that was saying, we think that it was a local media person, we think it was John McLemore. When the questions were asked by WFAA at the news conferences, what do you know about the media tip? And I'm paraphrasing that question. The answer they consistently got was, we don't know anything. And to continue to report and to put a picture of McLemore by the voiceover that says there's been a tip that it's been reported that the local media has done this, that is part of the tipping, is not responsible reporting, is not reasonable investigation. There is an addition by WFAA to the Chronicle reporting, that is the identification of McLemore and the implication that he is involved. I want to take a chance to cite part of Firestone that I did not cite in my brief, and that is even if you looked at the Nightline report and said, well, that is a reasonable interpretation of what was going on at that time, Firestone says that even if they are varying interpretations of the events, the media is not entitled to take the one that is most damaging to the individual and put that out. In that instance, they have to prove not only that it's a reasonable interpretation of what's going on, but it's a true interpretation of what is going on. It does not assist, Justice Spector, the media to begin their statements with, it has been reported that. I take that from a United States Supreme Court, Milkovich. That is the, can you insulate your statements with, oh, it's my opinion, or I think that. And in that case, the court said, those do not insulate you. It has been reported that is no better than, I think that, or it is my opinion that. And there are valid reasons that that doesn't work. The Constitution already provides substantial protection for libel defendants. it's got to be a false statement under Heaps. It's got to be have culpability associated with it. There is summary judgment standards that have to be met in either state or federal court. It has to be about actual facts. That's the Jerry Falwell case. It's subject to increased and enhanced appellate review. All of those things the Supreme Court of the United States in Milkovich said are ample protections. And we don't need an additional protection that it has been reported that is a prophylactic phrase which saves you from having to state the truth.
Any other questions?
Well, I have one.
Why does the affidavit of Valerie Williams not eliminate the malice claim?
Well, if this case is to be decided on actual malice, I say that we've got a rough road to hoe. I will point the court specifically to Justice White's concurring opinion in Dun & Bradstreet, where he says essentially that it's extremely difficult to meet this standard, and what happens to people like McLemore is whatever lies have been told about them, untruths, will simply stand. There's going to be no verdict, and the public will assume that what was reported was true.
The Waco Court of Appeals defined the controversy as being journalistic ethics, a controversy over journalistic ethics in this case, as opposed to a broader view of what the public controversy was, and that being the raid upon the Branch Davidian compound. Do you agree with the Waco Court of Appeals characterization that the relevant controversy should be defined as journalistic ethics as opposed to the Branch Davidian compound raid?
I do.
Why?
All right. The controversy, there certainly existed a controversy, that being what happened at the raid. Why did it go south? Why did we have these deaths and injuries? But that's not what McLemore was talking about. He didn't say, you know, the government did this wrong. The Davidians were right. The Davidians were wrong. The government was wrong. What he said is, I was out there. The guns started blazing. I went up there and got to hurt people. McLemore's issue, the only issue in which he was concerned, was the bare facts that he actually reported. And that was not a public controversy.
Doesn't that make the controversy the raid as opposed to the question of his or someone's journalistic ethics?
Well, until the WFAA published their statement, yes, I think it did. Anything else? Thank you.
Mr. White said that Mr. McLemore is just like Gertz, Elmer Gertz, the plaintiff in the landmark Supreme Court case. In that case, it is notable that Elmer Gertz, as the Supreme Court held or noted, never held a press conference, never spoke to the press, never made any comments to the news media about the case that he was handling.
What was the substance of those press conferences? Was it limited to just the facts, the bare facts?
Mr. McLemore, you're asking?
Yes.
Yes. The press conference that Mr. McLemore had was when he left the scene of the raid in the immediate aftermath of the raid, and there were basically the what-if question, I mean, what happened questions. What happened? Who shot first? You know, how many agents were wounded? What did you see happen there?
How did that draw him into the public debate about whether someone had been tipped off or why or what went wrong with that raid?
First off, at the time that Mr. McLemore was having his press conference, right after the raid, the ATF agents who were carrying their dead and wounded off the compound were openly saying that we believe that this raid went wrong because of the actions of the local news media, including John McLemore, who's present at the compound, uninvited, at the time that the raid commenced, alerted the cult and allowed them to lay an ambush. They were saying that then. They said it later when Kathy Fair, among other reporters, were speaking to ATF members. Then Kathy Fair went on Nightline and reported it publicly 48 hours later. And before Ms. Fair appeared on Nightline, the very first print news stories about the Davidian raised the issue of what was the role, what was the responsibility of the local news media, and what went wrong out there. Article in the Dallas Morning News.
But you keep emphasizing he called press conferences, or
he called one press conference, or held one press conference.
In. What is it about those press conferences that drew him into the debate of what went wrong and what
went wrong? As they've been characterizing it in this case, he portrayed himself as a hero. I was out there, and I did what I could to help save these agents. The controversy was whether or not he was, in fact, not a hero, but the perpetrator of what went wrong out there.
And that's how he got drawn into this controversy. He was more than willing for the world to think of him as a hero, and in fact received commendation from the ATF. But the flip side of the coin is, well, maybe you're not a hero, maybe you bear some responsibility and some fault. And that was an issue that emerged as a controversy before WFAA ever reported on it. WFAA didn't create this controversy. They reported on the controversy. And they reported on it.
Do you have the same view of opposing counsel that if he was a TV anchor, he was not a all-purpose public figure unless he was a commentator in some way?
Well, if that's the test, and I don't believe it is, but if that's the test, he certainly fulfills that. There's numerous affidavits that Mr. McLemore himself submitted of people calling in saying that they thought of John McLemore as an opinion maker. Now, a straight news reporter is not someone who makes opinions, and this is his evidence, not our evidence. But people calling in, these viewers who called in after the Nightline show, referred to him as an opinion maker. And we have the recent example here in Texas of the Dracos decision from the San Antonio Court of Appeals.
So was he an opinion maker in Dallas?
Well, let's clarify that. Your Honor, I do not know of any commentary he had given on any broadcast in Dallas. He did appear. His live reporting from the scene of the raid was carried on WFAA. So this wasn't the WFAA.
If that solid had there been, just that alone, does that make him a public figure simply because his newscast was picked up by the national feed?
Well, this newscast, when he goes and inserts himself into the raid, when he thrusts himself into this vortex of the controversy, and there was already a prior controversy over the Davidian and actions or lack of action on the part of law enforcement vis-a-vis the Davidians. This had been a series of newspaper articles that had just been starting to be published by the Waco newspaper the day before. And so McLemore takes the controversy as he finds it. I mean, he was there, not just because the ATF was there, but because there was already a controversy in the news media about the Davidian. And he inserts himself into that controversy, quite physically inserts himself into that particular controversy.
So the ATF agents were public figures, too?
Well, they're public officials, Your Honor. They're
the guy who's out there carrying the weapon?
Well, classically, he's a public official, particularly law enforcement officials who have, in some circumstances, the authority to use deadly force. Classically, they are held to be public officials, separate category, public officials in libel actions. If one of the ATF agents had brought a libel action, more than likely the correct decision would be that person was a public official for purposes of Times versus Sullivan analysis.
Any other questions? Thank you. That concludes the argument in the first call. The court will now take a brief recess.